Hey founders, this is the SaaS Boss Show, the podcast for SaaS founders in the growth stage who want to get unstuck, build high-performing teams, and get clarity about how to build a profitable startup. Every week, I interview SaaS consultants, coaches, and experts who work with dozens of startups just like yours and share their best strategies to overcome the daily challenges of growing a profitable SaaS. My name is Natalie Luniva, and I'm a growth and leadership coach to SaaS founders, and I'm also married to a SaaS founder, and I'm so pleased that you've joined us on this conversation. Hi, everyone. Today, it is my pleasure to interview Sean Flynn about funding. How do I know if now is a good time for me to be funded? What options out there and what options are good for my situation and many other things? Sean, regularly working with incubators, accelerators, angel groups, Sean has helped several companies land and set up operations in Silicon Valley, as well as Silicon Valley companies set up offices, partnerships, and funding overseas. Sean is the founder of Silicon Valley Successes, a television show that features entrepreneurs and people that work with them, and is the host of the podcast Silicon Valley. Welcome to the show, Sean.
Thank you for inviting me on. I'm honored and I'm excited for today.
So tell us, how did you start working with founders?
So I lived in China for 5 years. I had three companies there, two failed, one succeeded. The one that did okay, my partner bought me out in the beginning of 2013. I came back to the US. And as funny as it sounds, I wasn't employable. And you know, I had lived overseas for about 8 years, Costa Rica, China, Europe, and the whole time I was overseas, I was either, you know, starting my own little things to survive or, you know, basically kind of hustling, building companies, failing, all that good stuff as most people do. But when I came back, I tried to get a job at a huge corporation because for me, I was exhausted and I was thinking this would be an easier route to go. And it just didn't happen. But startups were excited to have anyone on their team. And so I was working at one company, Connect Group Enterprises. And while I was working there as an account executive, I got to know a couple of angel investors. One in particular, Roger King, who is the founder of Bay Angels in the Bay Area. And I got to know him. And like most startups, we ran out of funding. We didn't find that fit. And so I found myself with a lot of extra time and I just went to Roger and I was like, hey, do you need anyone to vet companies for you? And he's like, what's your background? And I told him, you know, I had started some things on my own. One did pretty good. And he's like, you know, we're not going to pay you. I was like, I'm just here for knowledge. Don't worry about it. And it was probably one of the best decisions of my life because I got to sit in this room, vet companies. So companies would come to the angels. They would have these pre-screening meetings before introducing them to the whole angel group. And I would just sit there with these angel investors as they're tearing apart companies. I mean, literally asking question after question with me just nodding my head going, wow, that's a good question. Oh my gosh. Like, wait a second. How did they even think of that? So I kept thinking it was almost like getting an MBA every time I sit down with these people. Cause I mean, these people, some of them they're using the angel group for their own, you know, venture capital fund as deal screening for deals to look at in the pipeline. So, I mean, I remember one meeting I was at, the guy next to me ran a $100 million fund, the other guy, you know, another $100 million fund, and all these people just in this room with me. And I'm going, this is pretty amazing. I get to sit here and listen to these experts and just learn. And so over time, I was there for quite a bit of time. I ended up being the investment director for the group. And then I was starting to do deal flow agreements between the angel group and these Chinese incubators and accelerators that were just opening up in Silicon Valley. And the idea was this angel group had, you know, 20 years of connections in Silicon Valley. I mean, their network's pretty incredible. And all these new groups that were coming in didn't have a network, but had, you know, capital, they had funding, they had, you know, just money to spend. And so I was just doing deal flow agreements where it was, you know, we have all these startups that we can introduce to you. Do you have all this capital that you can invest in them? And through these meetings, a lot of these groups started to ask me my background. And when I said I lived in China, they're like, "Ni hui shou zhong wen?" Like, "Can you speak Chinese?" "Yeah, I can speak it, you know, not a problem." Mei wenti. And, you know, they slowly started to recruit me. And then finally, one incubator accelerator gave me a really nice offer. So I talked to the angel group. I was like, "Hey guys, you know, this has been fun, but there's a lot of opportunity with this one group." And we, you know, I left, but I didn't really leave because, you know, I'm still friends with all those guys today, guys and girls today. And then I started working with incubators and accelerators the last couple of years. The one up into the trade war with China, one of the major things we were doing was helping companies set up offices and facilities in China. So I would take, you know, 8 or 10 companies on these road shows there, make introductions to local investors, the local government. You know, we'd have all the dinners, all the stuff needed for them to see if it was a good fit for them to set up an office, set up facilities, what type of arrangements could be made, any, you know, perks if they were to open up in this city or that. So I was working with startups to expand, not only into China, but, you know, we still do have facilities in Germany, Israel, Korea, all over the world. And some of these places would send companies to Silicon Valley. So when they would land here, we would also have to do the whole same setup where we're introducing them to service providers, lawyers, accountants, HR, all the people that they would need to set up operations, grow and expand. Because, I mean, you can't be a company without a location or office in Silicon Valley. That's a rule, right? To any tech company. So yeah, I would help them, you know, navigate the terrain. And then that just kept growing and growing. And now kind of where I'm at right now. So my podcast and my TV show and all that, what I realized over the years was people have the same questions. And I always would introduce them to the same people to answer these questions. "Oh, you have a question about IP protection. You have a question about, you know, accounting principles. You have questions about this or that." Like, and I just thought, you know, how great would it be to instead create a reference library and just go, you know, watch episode 6. And then if you have more questions, I'll make the intro, and it saves everyone so much time. And so I started doing that. But no, I've been working with startups now. So I moved back to San Francisco in 2013. First year, I just kind of hung out more or less. I was actually a personal trainer because I got in terrible shape in China. I think that's part of living, you know, as overseas and working with your company. You focus all your time on it and you kind of let your body go and that. So I want to do that, and I had some money saved, so that was good. But cost of San Francisco and living, and then I jumped into the startup world and been there ever since. I hope that's an okay bet. I can go into more detail. Or
now, let's talk about what kind of funding options are out there and available for founders.
So actually, it's as creative as people can be. And what I mean by that is a lot of people just, they have this idea, I need money from a wealthy individual, which is great. But I mean, who is that individual? So you have friends and family that can write maybe small checks. If you don't have friends and family, you know, there's angel investors, individual, or there's syndicates, which are groups that come together. Often when angels, if someone in that group invests in you, they'll want to introduce you to other angel groups to invest in, or that would want to invest in you because they want to close around. What I mean by close around, you know, if you're trying to raise $500,000, maybe an angel writes a check for $50K. Well, you still got $450 that you need for that, you know, the next year of growth, the next 18 months, or however long you're raising the capital for. I mean, just talking about angel groups, I mean, universities have angel groups, alumni groups, the list goes on and on. But some other, you know, crowdfunding, either crowdfunding for equity or just crowdfunding where people are giving you money and you give them, you know, a nice t-shirt or a pen with your company name on it, or who knows what the exchange is. I mean, those are all out there. Depending on if you have any personal assets, you know, SBA loans, you go to a bank. Even that's very rare for startups because, you know, normally, you know, they just graduate college or something like that. They don't have those assets to loan against, or that car they could sell or anything like that. But yeah, venture capitalists as well for later on, family offices for later on as well. But for the most part, the very beginning, it's either, you know, your own capital, what you save, credit cards, whatever, friends and family, you know, individuals that can write a check, and then going from there. But what one thing I don't think people, because once you have your network and you start looking at who your network is, you start realizing that there could be more people than you thought that potentially could write you a check. And also in that process too, while you're thinking about it, you might realize, you know, sometimes you don't need as much money as you think if you can sell. And what I mean by that is there's people that can only get employees if they pay market rate. And then there's other people that can get employees based on selling a dream. And, you know, where you have these most incredible engineers working for just equity in the company because they've bought into what's going on. They, you know, believe in the CEO, they believe in the company, they believe in the product. And I mean, I found, at least maybe I'm wrong, but I mean, those companies are the ones that actually make it to where they can get funding. So there's a lot of ways to go about it. But then there's also always the way of, you know, having a day job and just doing this as your hustle at night on the weekends while you get to that one point where you actually have revenue coming in the door. And I mean, that's when you actually have the best chance, or is a good time to raise capital. Well, depending, because you actually have something for people. So a lot of startups will try, you know, from day one, I need to raise $100,000 to even start. Well, you know, maybe if you have a track record, maybe if you've already done a few companies, someone will write a check for you. But just on an idea and a napkin, that's pretty rare. Yeah. So, I mean, unless you have something, and what I mean by something is, you know, some traction, and people always throw that word traction around. And I mean, what does it mean? It means something different for everyone. I like to think of it as a repeatable business model that just needs money to scale. You know, you've already proven to the market, we already have a few customers, they're paying us. We've already done the analytics on it. We figured out that, you know, our cost of acquiring a new customer is this amount on average. We feel that we can increase it this amount just by scaling. But, you know, we figured it out. We kind of have a rough idea of the model of, you know, if we spend this much money, we'll get this much money back in the door. And now just to really scale it to where we're making a profit, you know, this is what we kind of need. I mean, when you bring that to sorry to cut you off. Go on.
No, go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, when you're at that stage, that's when you actually have some leverage in a conversation. That's when you can actually go to someone and go, listen, I have a company and that's, you know, I can prove that there's value in it because I've proven, you know, the metrics. I have this traction so far. This is what we're working on right now. This is what we're going to, our expectations in the future. And this is what our possibilities could be. And then you don't need to give up, you know, like on Shark Tank, when they go 40% of their company for, you know, some little capital, you're like, really? But, you know, you actually can sit there and go, no, this is what we feel it's valued at. You know, you have your 409A valuation or whatever, but, you know, you actually have something to stand on that. Yeah.
So I love the idea that you need ideally to have something in place before going out and asking for money, because I tell you, I spoke to one founder who has been on this for 5 years. He lives in his parents' house, he and his wife and his kids, for 5 years, and he does not have product. He is not employed because I don't know what he's thinking about, but really, he's raising money to even start building his product. So it's not something that he has. And I think maybe that's why it's taking him so much time to go out and get this funding, because he doesn't even have anything. In this time, you could have built, sold, and, you know, get so much benefit out of it instead of just waiting for this funding. So I think this is really interesting that you mentioned. But also,
I'm jealous of this guy. 5 years unemployed. This sounds pretty nice to me. He should write a book on it. I mean, I would read it. I mean, God.
I don't know.
5 years, 5 years living at home, the good life.
So what are our options to consider the funding? I mean, is there a specific, what funding is good for me? Do we need to consider the stage of my product? Do we need to consider how much I need so that I know which way of funding to choose?
Okay, so with that, there's one quote that I remember an angel investor telling me, and I always share this with as many people as possible. And all it is, you know, when you're thinking about a company or you know, you're an investor or even entrepreneur, just the one phrase or sentence of a repeatable, or like not repeatable, what is the probability I'll get my money back at a multiple I'm happy with? So what do I mean by that? So if the company, if they think it's this, you know, moonshot and, you know, almost impossible to get any money back, that multiple's got to be huge for people to be interested. Or if it's more secure, they think, you know, it's a 20% chance I'm going to get my money back at a 6x multiple or something like that. You know, it doesn't have to be as big of a win to entice investors. So the more you have at your company, the more of a probability the investor's thinking, okay, I'm going to get my money back. So, you know, you can entice them to invest more likely. So with that, I mean, your company, a thing that a lot of people will always say is, you know, hold off on funding as long as possible. Because the longer you hold off, the more, you know, the less you have to give up to get. You know, if you're at the very beginning, say you've been unemployed 5 years and you're living at home in you know, the basement, you probably have to give up almost all of your company to get anything, at least if the investor's smart, because he's going to know, listen, you don't have anything. But if you come to someone and just go, listen, we have this amazing pipeline, we have all these purchase orders, we have all these sales, we have all these clients that have signed all these contracts for this amount of time, we just need this much money, you know, you don't have to give up as nearly as much. And then actually, if you're at that point when you actually have customers, you have purchase orders, I mean, you might not even need investment. You just, you know, factor in where you're taking a loan against the, you know, the contracts, the purchase orders and that. You might at that time, you know, have traction. There's a lot of, okay, so let's go back. Sorry. If you're very, very early stage, you know, one way of getting funding is just going through accelerator programs. So there's a lot of accelerator programs that you might have to give up, you know, quite a bit of your company, you know, 7% for 125K or 5% for 100K or, you know, they're all over the map. Some of them, it'll be, you know, 50K for 3%. It ranges quite a bit. But I mean, I've met founders in the past that have said, listen, this accelerator program, you know, maybe they took 6% for 50K, but that 50K allowed me to focus only on this company for 6 months and actually grow it. Now we're at a good spot. If it wasn't for that, you know, I'd be homeless or there's a ton of things that they'll say. So, I mean, going online and just research and accelerators, they're all over. What I mean by that is the stage that your company needs to be at to be in. Some of them, literally an idea. Others of them, you need to have traction. You need to have some customers. Other of them only want later stage companies. I mean, maybe some corporate accelerators. They have a certain niche and they say, listen, you have to be at this stage because, you know, we're only interested in working with companies that have been this mature. But, you know, maybe they just give you money and not really take anything. Maybe they're just observing you. But very early, I mean, like I said, you might be able to get a decent check or, you know, some equity from accelerator with just an idea. So that's one way of getting funded very early on. Another way, you know, back to friends and family, you know, maybe this relative can write, you know, 5,000, this other one, 10, who knows, maybe you have that second uncle that's actually a private equity hedge fund manager. I mean, It's possible. Or that one that invested in Bitcoin that's never told anyone, that's now like, okay, you know, I've been unemployed for 5 years, but I'm always going to reference that. But yeah, reaching out to that network. So growing your network of investors might be actually of the first step to finding out what's good, a good way of funding for your company. Cause I try to say, like, you know, this way or that way is best for funding, but considering there's so many ways to go about doing it for your particular company, maybe a better idea is to surround yourself with a network that can give advice and tell you which way is more the most optimal way for your company. And with that, I would recommend, you know, going to, you know, pitch events. If there's not many pitch events in your city or where you live, you know, online, especially now, I'm amazed how many events that there are. You can just go through Zoom. If you go on Eventbrite to, you know, start a pitch, and you'll see the people in the audience. You can kind of network with them. You can connect with them on LinkedIn, see who the host is, who the judges are, connect with them, ask them questions, ask them for their time. Your alumni from your university or Chamber of Commerce or that. I mean, there's all these groups that have high net worth individuals or people that can introduce you to them. And then with that, you know, bankers will make suggestions on what you need to get funded from them, or, you know, these are the people you should actually talk to. These are angels that I know of that will send their companies here after they get to a certain deal or a certain size. Maybe you should go talk to them. Also, you know, you can always go on AngelList or these websites and actually look for what investors have invested in companies similar to mine, and then just start reaching out to them, or startups themselves that are very similar to you, and go, you know, what angels or what group should I be talking to? Who funded you guys? What's your recommendation? I mean, if you find a couple of companies, and they're all over, I mean, Crunchbase, AngelList, these websites have a lot of companies that will be at the same stage as yours, whether it's pre-seed, seed, angel, or A round, or any of these. I mean, later on, the companies would be harder to contact, but very early on, the companies, I mean, you'll most likely be direct to the CEO or the CTO, CFO, or someone that will want to share their journey and what's worked for them, whether it was attending these events, whether it was attending this accelerator, whether it was pitching at this angel group or that, and just ask them, you know, okay, it worked for you. What was the route you took? Because I would like to copy that, because my company's in the same space, very similar, even though we are different, and just see if it can work for me. So yeah, so I guess for a very, very early stage company, my recommendations would be building that network in the startup and angel community through networking at events and reaching out to companies similar in your space and asking what's worked for them, and build out your LinkedIn network. I mean, that's one thing I found very helpful personally and with a lot of startups, because you'll just say, listen, you know, you have these three angel investors that you met last night at an event. Now your second degree connections with 100 others. You can tell, you know, they have their Sandhill Angels or Band of Angels or that they're in their profiles. Start reaching out to all their second degree connections, or the person that was really got along with you last night really well, ask them for, you know, coffee and introductions to their friends that can just give you advice. Like, I mean, that's the famous saying, ask for advice, get money, ask for money, get advice. So just keep asking everyone for advice, and, you know, maybe you'll get both at the same time, money and advice. But yeah, I think a better answer might not be what's the best source of funding for you, just because it's so broad, but what's the best way to build your network to the funding? Hopefully that was okay. I ramble a little bit.
I like that sentence, so I put it down. What's the difference between the incubator and the accelerator?
Good question. Yeah, that's often confused. So think of so you have a shared workspace, you have an incubator, and you have an accelerator. And I added shared workspace there because a lot of people might think WeWork is an incubator in that, which it's not. It's just a shared workspace. If it survives, who knows? I mean, maybe a few months from now, it's empty warehouse space everywhere. But no, WeWork's awesome. I love it. I have so many meetings there. It's great. It's a great facility. Hopefully that plug, you know, balances it out. So a shared workspace, you just rent a desk. That's it. There's no other real benefit. I mean, maybe there's beer on tap or something, or a ping pong table, but there's really not much. You have a desk. There's an office that you get for so many hours of the month, and then you just go on from there. I mean, that's life. You come and go as you please. Think of an incubator as more of a shared workspace plus, where normally it will have a focus. The companies there will be at a certain stage or a certain sector of tech. Normally they'll also provide other benefits, such as introductions to potential lawyers, accountants, you know, that they've already reached agreements with, that they've already vetted. So for example, maybe you'll go to the manager of the incubator and go, listen, we really need an introduction to a law firm for patents, for IP protection. I mean, our tech, we've built it out, now we want to talk to a lawyer. They'll say, okay, we have partnerships with these two law firms that we've already talked to them, and they'll sit down with you for free and give you some consultation and that, hear their phone numbers. Or, you know, an incubator might have an event space where, you know, every night or a couple times a week there'll be events or that. But it's a shared workspace, but there's other things that can benefit you, that can help you out. I mean, going back to the mentors, maybe there's a list of mentors in that group that they've already have relationships with, where this one will help you with your design, or this one will talk to you about your sales funnel or your marketing plan or that. You know, just people that they've already networked with and talked to that want to give back to the community, or there's more resources there than just a desk. And then you have an accelerator program that normally has a start and an end date. And in that time, they expect some milestones to be hit. You know, you'll go there and they'll go, listen, we only work with companies at this stage. Through this process, you'll have classes, you know, 6 or 8 hours a week, or maybe it's more, maybe it's like a 2-week accelerator where it's 5 hours a day with different service providers. You know, this is how you use a CRM system. We'll walk you through it. Okay, now tomorrow, here's a mentor that's going to coach you on your sales funnel. We're going to start implementing it. And now this person's going to teach you how to do your marketing plan, and bam, 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 bam. It's all, you know, it's regimented. It's almost like a semester at a university, but focused only on your startup. And like I said, there's a start and end date. Normally with an accelerator, there's also some type of investment from the accelerator program for equity in your company. Maybe it's at the beginning of the accelerator. It's a fixed amount, like everyone that goes to it will get $25,000 for 5% of their company. Or maybe it's at the very end and they only pick like 3 of the companies that have gone through the accelerator. So maybe there's 10 companies and they say, we're only going to write a check for these 3. The other 7 won't get anything. They didn't give up anything. You know, they use the accelerator for their vetting process for their investments. But yeah, start and end date, certain milestones. Normally it's really good for building out a network. And then at the very end, there's normally a pitch event or a demo day where you're presenting your company to a room full of potential investors. Or, I mean, normally the room will have a mix of service providers, potential, you know, local government, who knows, maybe the economic development manager for a city or that, because they want to entice you to come to their city, or, you know, Chamber of Commerce, join us, or who knows who's in the audience. But it's, you know, a half day event or something like that, where the people that have gone through, you see them at the very end and they're telling you, hey, this is my company. This is why you should invest. This is what we're going to solve. And, you know, they have their 10 slide pitch deck they created during the accelerator and that. So just to summarize all 3 again, shared workspace, you got a desk, that's about it. Incubator, you have a desk plus a bunch of other benefits that you can utilize if you want. There's no start or end date. You'll probably be there a year, maybe longer, or maybe it's a temporary thing. You're in an office, then you're there as you're moving to a new office or that. They have events in their facility, but it's not mandatory to attend or go. And then you have the accelerator, which start and end. These things are supposed to be hit. This is the sector we're working on. This is your mentor or your advisor that you'll work with these others. Get these things done. We want to see, you know, at the very end, your demo, and, you know, launch your career or launch your company.
Got it. There are so many incubators and accelerator programs out there, and you can probably see there are lists of dozens and dozens of companies that, you know, those are active right now, or those are looking for companies to take on. How do we pick the right one for us?
Good question. No, there's a lot of people that waste a lot of time on bad accelerator program or give up equity in their company and find out that they got nothing in return for that, for the equity they gave up. Or, I mean, the list goes on from going to an accelerator program and finding out just every mentor, it was almost like, you know, one of these multi-level marketing scams where everyone's just trying to upsell you and go, you know, that your product's good, but you need to hire me to redesign it. And then you should hire my friend to do the patents on it. And then, oh my gosh, I have another friend. I've heard absolute horror stories from some founders. But I've also heard horror stories from mentors too, that hey, this one group, they asked me to be a mentor and I was total bamboozled. I was totally tricked. Like, I thought I was just given my time away for free to help these companies. And then I found out these companies were paying the institution or the organization that was running this accelerator and weren't getting anything out of it. Stories go on and on. I mean, you just mentioned there's a huge list. They come and go. I mean, there's no real accredited accelerator. You know, there's not like, oh, we got this certificate, we're legit. There's none of that. I mean, you can start an accelerator tomorrow if you wanted, you know, SaaS accelerator. You know, we get you to the next level and have a cool logo and, you know, a good pitch and just have like three testimonials. You know, I was in my basement for 5 years. Now I'm still in my basement, but what I'm saying is, I mean, check them out. Do your research. That's probably the best way. Ask. So a lot of startups, they'll put the little badge of the accelerator that they graduate from on their website or their LinkedIn. Or if you just reach out to people in your space that are in the same sector, same stage, or maybe later on, and just go, you know, have you guys gone through an accelerator program? Which ones did you recommend? Which were good? Which weren't? You know, find out the ones that have been around a while. I mean, that's normally a good sign that's productive for both parties, is the ones that it's not their first batch or cohort or group. It's, you know, their third or fourth, and they have these people from the first group that you can reach out to, and they actually say, you know, since then, these are the things I've actually done. And it's because of some of the mentors that I met there that introduced me to these potential clients or potential people to work with. Or, you know, their demo day was outstanding. It got me this many meetings with angels or VCs after. Or, you know, the accelerator program itself, I didn't get too much out of it, but the alumni network that's from it, I have some of the best connections I have from it. I mean, that is one thing that people don't talk about too much, but it's actually a huge benefit of accelerator programs, is the alumni network. I mean, some of these alumni, I mean, God, you hear about them, of these people that go through a program 5 years later, they exit, now they have money, they want to invest, they want to get back. And once you're tapped into that ecosystem, it's like, they say some of these groups are the equivalent of, you know, Harvard MBA, that alumni group, it's ridiculous. And they're close-knit communities. So finding a good accelerator, I mean, look for ones that's in your sector. Or, I mean, if you're an AR/VR company, you probably don't want to even apply for a med tech accelerator. Or autonomous car, you probably wouldn't want to apply for an accelerator focused on ag tech. You know, maybe there's overlap, I'm not sure. It depends on what you're doing. But, I mean, there could be autonomous crop dusters or something, I don't know. But, you know, find something that's relevant to you. Ask people that have gone through the program. Talk to the mentors. If the program's good, a lot of mentors will put on their LinkedIn, I'm a mentor at this program. Great. Look them up. Talk to them. How many hours do you spend with the startups during this accelerator? What milestones do you see them actually hit? Are they just going there and going through the motions? Or do you actually see them grow and improve? Do you have companies that you advise in these accelerator programs that you can introduce me to, that I could talk to? Do you know any angels that have invested in the graduates of these programs? Could I talk to them? How well did they think that they were prepared or the information they got? Where are they sourcing a lot of their deals from? This one program, who do they lead into? What I mean by that is it a lead gen for an angel group or VCs? Or, I mean, who will you have access to, or who tries to monitor this group to make, you know, that connection? Because, I mean, some of these accelerators, once you're in, I mean, I'd mentioned the alumni group, but you kind of have a pretty well path for your next few rounds. I mean, you know, your graduation, that demo day, who's in the audience. They already have picked out, you know, who the higher opportunities to invest in based on the mentors and the feedback they got from the people running the accelerator. You know, look at this company, check them out. They're good. You have the VCs at later stage that are looking at the earlier stage VCs and angels. You know, who are they investing in? Okay, we're going to keep an eye on them. And you've just got this pipeline or this path kind of to follow. And some of it, the first step is getting into one of these accelerator programs, or, you know, get investment from this angel group, or get investment from this VC. I mean, once you put yourself on that path, wherever you're coming in, there's some steps moving forward that are more open than before, if that makes sense.
Cool. So we're 45 minutes into this. Do you still have about 15 minutes to talk about the other two stages?
To be honest, I had an 8:30 call. Could we wrap it up in the next 4 minutes? Is that okay?
Sounds good. So tell us, we primarily talked about the first stage, which is really like you're at the beginning. What about those a little bit more advanced and advanced companies? Would they benefit more from angel or VC?
Well, I mean, when you're saying later stage, more advanced, I mean, it really depends on kind of the amount of money they're raising. And what I mean by that is it could be a very, very early stage company. I mean, they've only been around 3 months, who knows? But if they're raising $10 million, that limits most individual investors. So you're not going to get the angel able to write that check. I mean, there are people that raise $10 million from angel groups and angel syndicates. But then you have, you know, 60 people writing, you know, $50,000 check, $100,000 check, $250,000, all over the place. Where, you know, a $10 million check for, you know, some VCs, that's their standard check. I mean, maybe they write, you know, checks between the size of $3 million to $20 million or $5 million to $20 million, you know, their range. So depending on kind of what type of funding you're seeking, that kind of narrows in a bit who you can actually approach. So, I mean, say you're raising $1.5 million or that, you can go to angels. You know, this angel might write a check for $100,000 or $250,000 or who knows, maybe there's a syndicate that will get $500,000. And if you're raising, you know, $5 million, something like that, you're probably going to more talk to micro VCs and VCs that write checks, you know, $1 million, $3 million. And then later on, you know, you could just start asking people, you know, your fund thesis, you know, how big is your fund? How many, you know, what's your normal check size? I mean, if you're raising, you know, $20-50 million, this goes back to, you know, you're not going to take checks that are $50,000. You're going to try to get those checks that are, you know, $5 million or that. So, and then, you know, at the beginning stages, mentioned angels, angel syndicates, then you have micro VCs playing in the same realm. A little later, you have VCs, you get family offices there. Then, you know, you get later on more institutional private equity and that money. Family offices is something that is getting more and more interesting, especially because of the, so it's a one drawback that people don't talk about too much or know about too much early companies is, you know, VCs, they have an investment date, but they also have a harvest date. I mean, the fund, you know, year 7 or year 10 has to collect the money to give back to the limited partners. So they have to, you know, urge you to move fast, and they also have to get that money out of there at some date. Whereas, you know, an angel, you know, it's their personal money. They don't have this contract or these guidelines that say, you know, this is the end date. It's more, okay, this is my money that I invested it. You know, maybe I'd like to see it back before I get too old, but, you know, it's my personal. And that's kind of the same with, you know, family offices. It's more of an individual investment. There's no hard date where they have to get it back. Well, at least, you know, that's the theory. Who knows what's really going on. But yeah, and those checks can be a lot bigger than you know, you got the super angels, the family office, and that. So that's one area that is getting, at least from the few things I've seen, are getting more active in the startup community, and a lot of startups don't know too much about it. But yeah, it just all goes back to the check size that you're looking to get, and then who is available or able to write those types of checks.
Got it. All right, Sean, thank you so much for all those nuggets of wisdom. That's been awesome.
Thank you. Thank you for your time. Thank you for inviting me on your show. I really appreciate it. And if you ever need me in the future, let me know.
I will. And that's it for this episode. For those tech founders who have a remote team, I have a question. Do you find yourself that it's much faster for you to do things by yourself than waste all of that mental energy delegating tasks to someone? And so you either don't hire anyone, or if you already have a remote team, you're guilty of doing those tasks by yourself, because there's just so much energy goes into delegating the tasks and then just managing people. Are you able to take a few days off and not be worried that your servers will go down or your support is going to blow up? What if you could work on more strategic, important things and let your team fix the bugs? If you only started building your team in the last couple of years, I guarantee that you are making lots of mistakes that hinder your growth without even realizing that. Oftentimes, you, the founder, may end up being the bottleneck to your team's success. That is definitely hard to swallow, but it's true. But also look on the bright side. This is also the easiest problem for you to fix, because you are in control of how to fix it. I'll be launching soon a program that will help tech founders improve your team performance, and as a result, remove the roadblocks to scaling your SaaS just by improving your operations and team dynamic. This is really the shortcut. To be notified when it's live, go to my website, natalieluneva.com/team. natalieluneva.com/team.